hearing detail. Ms. Barbara Anzac Conley should ask my question on hazards. So, question in a row.
Thank you, sir. Just the map on page 36 of your report that shows the existing PDP zones. I was wondering if you could just help us understand what the lines would look like if we were to agree with you that we should change things.
It's set out accurately in the appendix to the submission 142, but we've just looked it up and I've roughly traced it here, but effectively it would mean that part of the livestock residential zone would be changed in shape so that it juts out to the east towards the lake. What that would do is would make it easier for a fee simple subdivision of 4,000 metres squared. My recommendation is to include the building restriction area so that they're not putting the building further eastward into what could be more sensitive land, visually sensitive land.
Thank you. That's all for me, sir. Do you think you could give us a slightly more professional revision of that plan that we could pick up and run with?
Yes.
If the panel accepted your recommendation?
Will do.
Next one, Kelly's Flat and Ian Weir. Mr. Munro?
No, thank you.
Mr. Hudson?
No, thank you.
Nothing for you. One question from me, Mr. Barr. Your summary of Ms. Banks' advice. Recommend that one access of Ironside Drive is provided to serve access to the residential lot to reduce potential conflicts with existing traffic. How do we ensure that occurs, and do we need to at this point? Can we leave it to the subdivision process?
I'm quite confident that you could leave it to the subdivision process. There's, I'll just keep to exactly what she's asking for. One recommendation is fine if I drive is provided. Yes, I'm confident that through the subdivision chapter and the subdivision design guidelines that there is enough emphasis for access and appropriate access onto Ironside Drive.
Skira Heights.
As I see the submissions, Mr. Barr, the issue seems to be about views from the walkway and whatever rules package within the relevant land use zone would best match whatever quality of views is seen to be most appropriate. I haven't really seen much from the submissions talking about the actual problem with the medium density zone itself. Have I got that right, or what have I missed if there are some material matters relating to why the low density zone would be better than the medium density zone?
Yes, I agree. I think the problem was more or less addressed in the residential hearing stream to the treatment of building heights from, as viewed from the Skier Heights walkway. No other submitters have provided. Mr. Cutler is appearing, but for example, Infinity Investment Group haven't provided any other evidence saying why they think parts of the site should be retained and made into residential. So I'm comfortable with where the council's reply version of the provisions are to address amenity issues associated with use through the Square Heights plan.
So just by way of clarification, has that been addressed in the text of the residential chapter?
That's correct. Yeah, the council's reply version has specific rules that restrict the heights.
Following up on that, is this a continuation of the same moraine that Ms. Melhoff was concerned to protect further north on the
Kurimoko
and Wanaka Central?
I think it could be. I'm not a landscape architect or geomorphologist, but it looks like it could be. I think it is part of the same lateral moraine.
Because I note that you haven't included, well, I haven't gone back to Ms. Melsoff's evidence, but you haven't included a summary of what she thought.
No, I think, in fairness to Ms. Melsoff, I might not have asked her for advice on that site, given that I was comfortable with the council's response through the residential hearing stream. And the issue relates to views through the site rather than the integrity of the landform itself.
But if you had a building restriction area of the same ilk as on Kurimoko, you'd kill both birds with that stone.
Yes, you would. You'd be creating an open space adjacent to the walkway.
Exactly.
Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly where the submitters went in terms of the residential hearing stream, but as I said, I'm comfortable with council's reply version in terms of managing buildings. So the building, yes, buildings can go on the edge of the hillside, but there's restrictions imposing building height in relation to views across the walkway, so there's no rules concerning the sort of integrity or effects on the landform itself. More about looking over the top of this.
Well, I think that I should ask you, as part of the council's reply, to supply us with a view from Ms. Melsoff as to whether she's concerned, firstly, if it's an issue, and secondly, if the absence of a building restriction area on this property is inconsistent with the stance she's taken on the Kurimoko one, and whether the combination of her answers to that, those two questions might cause you reflect on your advice.
Thank you.
Family Trust on the corner first, starting 6.5. That's a no from my left, no from halfway right.
No.
That's a pass. Oh, no, possibly not. A gym page. Sensitivity issues that you discount from across the boundary because the hospital should not be a high noise generator. What about reverse sensitivity issues in the opposite direction?
In the context of noise from the medium density zoning affecting
the hospital, which is obviously a quiet and sensitive.
Yes, it is. as the intensity of development over and above what would be achieved through the low density residential zone, which is in the PDC zoning, would the medium density zoning have an effect over and above that? I don't think it would, and I mean there'll be an increase in terms of vehicle generation. There'll be arguably a loss of amenity. But in terms of things like noise or lighting or impacts on the sensitivity of the hospital and people in it, I don't think there's an issue there having above the loading residential zone.
And logically, where would the traffic, if to the extent there's traffic coming on the site as part of the meeting, then would traffic impinge on?
I think this thing's made a recommendation which I think could be resolved through the subdivision chapter that actually should be on the golf course road. And I think, so the naturally, I think access to the site will be
away from the hospital
towards the north, northeast, because you should be in the PDP transportation chapter, if it's anything like the operative plan, standards restricting vehicle accesses from intersections, that will be naturally pushing the access away from the corner.
Thank you. Next one. Alpine Estate.
Thank you. At 6:14, excuse me, Bar, you go through what the submitter's request is, and at point B, the request that a structure plan be included in the plan, and then at 6:15 you describe how the submitter has put forward, without much in the way of detail, of what it thinks might be a structure plan, which is described as an annotated planning map with what appears to be a road layout. I just wanted to confirm with you that the submitter hasn't offered anything else in terms of a structure plan.
No, there's been no evidence received, and they haven't put the slot to be heard.
No. Could it be reasonably inferred from the submission that it was requesting that the council should be the one that put a structure plan together?
The submitter's relatively active on that site in terms of applying for resource consent, so it seems to be sort of an incremental staging of some sort of overall plan they have. Well, it would be the council ultimately accepting it, and the submission's still live, hasn't been withdrawn. And that site could do with a structure plan, if any site could do with a structure plan in Wanaka. But to date, we haven't seen one in form of evidence, so...
Okay, that's all, thanks.
It's the reality of, if they've got an overall plan, they haven't told anybody else what it is.
Seems to be the case. Well, they're not interested in getting a check for that through the PDP.
I have a question about your 621. The question really is, do you have a consistency issue with your attitude to traffic as relates to Gordon land? And this land, where in the former you said you could sort out the subdivision chapter and subdivision process, and here you're saying we need a structure plan and an overall plan, and effectively it can't be left.
The Gordon land on the corner is, I think it's pretty obvious where the vehicle access is going to be, or likely to be. But with the Alpine Estate submission being, what would it effectively be, a pocket of medium density zoning or some sort of mixed use zoning within a wider area of low density residential with no structure plan and with no certainty how those are going to link up. I was just concerned with the potential higher densities and that not being adequately managed or contemplated, and also provides the council the opportunity to know where that the roads are going to be and how it can sort of undertake future investment and upgrading of its infrastructure with some certainty. I'd expect a structure plan for this site. I'd expect to see, you know, obviously the key roading layout through the site, the areas of higher densities, other connections, but also the key connections on the existing council road network. So the scale of, you know, the submission site's quite a bit larger as well, so the scale of development again, in my view, would require a structure plan.
Thank you. Satomi, starting at 6:26. Is the reality that the planning maps have to show the designation, it's not a matter of choice?
You mean where I use the phrase that is apparently their discretion to use this method, meaning the
designation? No, if you go back to submission, the request that the planning map show the reserve and rely less on designations. I'm not sure you're answering the submitter's concern, but I understand your answer.
Oh, they want to show the reserve classification on the planning map.
Yes.
Hmm.
Rather than the fact that it's designated.
Well, a reserve. The fact that a parcel of land is considered as reserve and that's on its title is irrelevant from a sort of Section 31 function.
But a designation is relevant.
It is relevant from a district plan function perspective.
So therefore, if a reserve is a roading reserve, a scenic reserve, or a recreational reserve is irrelevant?
just about a road reserve, it's road, especially defined in our district, the PDP is a legal road, so it's defined under the Local Government Act. A reserve, whether it be a scenic reserve or a common purpose reserve or whatever name that reserves get when they're considered, which I'm not familiar with, is to do with that process, and I don't really see it. I see them as being quite separate to the district plan, especially the functions of territorial authorities in terms of providing a district plan. I see them as quite separate.
Would it detract from the plan? If it was?
Oh, I think it'd just be unnecessary information, because fundamentally, if you're showing a mapping annotation, it should show. It should be there for a reason.
Yep.
There should be rules. There should be a zone for it. So I think it would be unwise to show reserves on the planning maps and not have any rules for them. And the council do that through the designation process. kind of separate process which we've annotated. So there'd be, it wouldn't be of any value at all to show that it's a reserve.
And potentially there would be a, the planning maps, given that they get updated every 10 years, as opposed to the reserves which could be changed.
A planning map would be updated if there's a change to the plan, or even a notice of requirement, a designation is confirmed, then the planning maps would be changed because there's processes that can make that happen without going through a plan review. That would be clunky as well. I mean, a reserve, when a subdivision, when land vested as reserve as part of a subdivision, it goes through that process, and is there another reason for planning maps to be updated or potentially to be updated? No real benefit from my perspective.
Clunky doing well.
Another question from me, 7.7, was Malsoff's recommendation that every point is subject to jurisdiction. Do you or indeed does Scott have a view on jurisdiction? Have you thought about it?
Not any further than our conversation yesterday.
Well, could you care, well, in that case, don't go any further. Suggest you put that down on the list.
Thank you.
San John Place and Lycan Lane. Commissioner Monroe?
Although there are a number of reasons for the recommendation, Mr. Barr, just looking at the summary, the established pattern of development and talk about the pattern of roads, etc. But if I look at the aerial photograph of Hawea on page 65, under 10.2, that shows a heck of a lot of winding cul-de-sacs that don't connect through the more suburban density part of Hawea too. And so I wasn't quite appreciating, other than that there are established landowners that might not all want to subdivide further, what it was about that existing pattern of roads that made it less suitable for intensification than the pattern of cul-de-sacs north that is suitable for intensification. Or has been intensified, I should say, previously.
Like how your subdivision pattern isn't ideal either, but I wasn't really drawing on Lake Hawea settlement as an exemplar of subdivision design and layout. I mean, there's nothing particularly in the requested land, Grandview Road, San John Place, White Lane, areas that would mean upzoning would be fatal. But having said that, I'd struggle to support upzoning if it was criticised that the subdivision pattern's poor and it's only going to get worse.
How would it get worse?
Because there's going to be more development, it'd be more intensive, so you have more people using the same poor, utilising the same poor access connections, and there'll be more people wanting to get to Lake Tawia and having to go all the way out to Cemetery Road and going all the way around the block to get back into town. Now that shouldn't prevent somebody from living somewhere if they choose to live in that place. But
yeah. What would be really useful for me would be if you could just bring that page of your report up to us. And then I'll ask you, come up. Because while I've got a clear sense of what Lycan Lane is, just between this year and I, and then I'll get you to show the other commissioners too, could you just show us what areas of land are and are not included? So for instance, are these two big parcels north of Lycan Lane?
In terms of the submission?
Yeah, in terms of the submission, I'd like to know which of these areas of land. Yeah, but I saw that blue bobby bit, but I wasn't sure if that was land that was excluded or land that was subject
to
the floodplain.
No, that's a
flood
plain. That's a flooding hazard to do with the dam burst, I think. I think the Batson submission gives it quite, essentially the...
It is. So, okay.
Whole block.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful for me. So, if you want to take your seat again, what I was going to ask was, is there not some likelihood that the size of those pathways mean that additional roads would need to be provided as the land is subdivided as well, and that might actually allow what you've described as an inferior road network to be enhanced?
Hard to say, because the roads already, I know that Lycan Lane is a private road, and I think the submitter will be pained to tell you that they've had it sealed at their cost. But it has a width of 20 metres. So
are you envisaging maybe a whole bunch of north-south cul-de-sacs being developed off the Lycan Lane cul-de-sac to serve the land on either side rather than
yes, and
new roads to newer roads or something
and
like
given
that?
Given the size, I mean, generally we can see it happen there. There's just going to be private driveways with an infill pattern of 4,000 down to something 1,000. I think there's Batson
okay.
wanted that for the density, so it's just going to be a whole lot of private lanes feeding into those roads.
And is that in turn mostly attributable to the presumption that lots of individual landowners will just do their own random little itsy-bitsy subdivision rather than something more comprehensive?
Yes, certainly. Yeah. I think there's, you know, you can count about 20, at least 20 or 30 lots there, and this is really, I think, two submitters supporting the rezoning.
So is this another example of if through some means a more comprehensive plan showing perhaps additional roads and showing the kind of outcomes that the PDP's describing strategically that are important, that might be the kind of pathway through which you might be more amenable to seeing the land up zone, notwithstanding the issue of character amenity and just the subdivision pattern for now?
Yep, that's right. And I think even the subdivision chapters, policy framework and design guidelines would help there, but it's a case of just, it'd be naive to think that, what would it be naive to think that could happen given the amount of property owners there and their intent to master plan that block of land?
Well, look, I'm not suggesting we have those methods available to us. I'm just canvassing with you the circumstances through which you might be less opposed to the outcome. And it seems that a big issue in your mind is how one could actually open up that land in a way that delivered a structure and a network of streets and walkways that
that's right.
wasn't as inferior or worse than what's there now.
That's right.
That's one thing. Next question. If we were to agree with the idea of an urban growth boundary for Hawea, and within the urban growth boundary was this block of land, would that of itself lead to a stronger case for rezoning now, or or not.
Well, I did say before with the land to the south that if it was rezoned, that was in the context of that site being, I think it's undeveloped, that you could have a much more comprehensive subdivision, whether or not of the density is different, each might get a subdivision pattern that's more amenable. In terms of this land, not necessarily is my answer, because you've got multiple land ownerships, there's already been subdivision on the site, and we have an urban zone that has a density of 4,000 metres squared, so it wouldn't be sort of being the large lot residential zone. So,
lastly, were we to agree that there was a sound case for upzoning, but we were mindful of some of those existing residents quite happy with things the way they are, would there be a justifiable resource management case for, and B, any suitable examples of, for instance, additional yard setbacks or edge treatment, so that if one site intensifies, the qualities of life on the neighbouring properties might not be as dramatically changed?
It depends what density the upzoning requested. I think there's Batson zoning, I'm not sure, I think it's just township, so I'm assuming it's an 800 square metre, 1/8 quarter acre section.
So using your Ranch Royale method, we might say whatever the nearest fit PDP zone to that is, we might say low density residential zone, for the sake of argument or discussion. In that scenario, would
I think that if I had to make a call on that, I wouldn't go there, and I wouldn't support bespoke rules for one little corner of the world. I'd also think, with my sympathies to those submitters who wouldn't appreciate this comment, I think that if the whole block is upzoned, well then there'll be landowners in there who still have 1 acre sites that would be little islands of paradise within that they don't have to modify. And I prefer that there was just a more broad brush application of urban zoning if that was the case.
Okay. So I think I've got no other questions.
Seem to be a lot of rural character there. There seems to be far more residential character, and sort of, so the real question is, has the horse bolted? Is this like the rural residential suburbs on Mount Eyre that are urban in every sense?
Yes, sort of talking generically about the rural residential zone, aren't you?
Yeah.
Rather than just the one of Life and Lane.
Well, certainly generically about the Hawea rural residential.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, from what I can see, from what I know, it's been subdivided to the to nothing denser than 4,000 metres squared, so it's sort of upholding the environmental outcomes of that, but that's the rural residential zone for you. Portline Ebb, and that also relates to both Ms. Mel Stops and I share concerns about rural residential zone on the other side of the urban growth boundary.
If that was going to be my next point, and because we previously discussed, I think that was it Ms. Malsock said, you wouldn't use a rural residential zone anywhere you wanted to preserve rural amenity. I think she might have been as blunt as that.
Fair comment.
So, in terms of, is this in fact, is there truly a case for large lot residential there, recognising the reality?
Yes, there is. I mean, and if the zoning became large lot residential within an urban growth boundary, it would be meeting the intent of the submissions opposing that zoning, because you're not changing the density. I think Mr. Van Rael's submission wants to be able to split them in half, so effectively he's asked for what we've now come up with, the large lot B zone, and I think Ms. Batson wants an 800, 1,000 square metre foot size.
As is, Judy has some minimum lot sizes, she remains generous, e.g. 800 square metres.
So effectively LDR.
LDR's 450.
So she's somewhere in between.
Operative township zone in Lake Harvey is 800, I think.
So that's where it's come from.
Probably, yes.
So you wouldn't have any qualms about large lot B, for instance.
To be consistent with my recommendations, I'm rejecting Mr. Van Rael's submission too, for some sort of infill, or he's suggesting a sort of infill opportunity. It will clearly be less severe in terms of the concerns I have around the future, the quality of sort of future subdivision patterns and outcomes, and then going to you're doubling the density with the 2,000 metre square, and then you'll be quadrupling it with your 1,000 metre square.
So less, but you'd still be uncomfortable.
Less, but I still maintain my recommendation to retain the status quo at the stage.
Can I ask a follow on to that, too?
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of your response there, that maybe LLRZ might be less of a problem. Can I just put that in the context of some of the previous answers you've given us, where you've said if lands could be held now, it might be more efficiently and better utilised in the future. And if LLRZ was so preferred now, that might make it harder to get a net improvement in the future. It might, in fact, permanently lock out ever being able to be upzoned as per the Hawea plan. So I just want to test whether you are, in fact, of the view that LLRZ would actually be less problematic, not possibly more problematic.
Oh, it would be the same. So large lot residential A, 4,000 metres squared, same as rural res, it drops down to B, or 2,000 metre squared, then that would be that. That's pretty much going to lock in that sort of infill and improvements on those drives for the time being. If anything, and what I was referring to before about holding land for future urban growth was rural zone land, larger blocks of land, and the rural zone itself is probably okay for that, because we don't have a minimum lot size for our rural zone, or the PDP doesn't have a minimum lot size. In this case, because of the subdivision pattern on that site already, I think the ship's already sailed in terms of trying to retain it for the future.
Okay.
I think if anything, because even though subdivisions occurred and titles have been issued, now would be the time to upzone it before people undertake improvements on the land. They could undertake further subdivision of those vacant sites.
So then, just to follow on, the one thing that has been bouncing in my mind, not just my own mind, you wouldn't think it would make sense for us to recommend not upzoning the land now, but the council undertaking a structure plan and looking to upzone it through a change once it locks in a way of getting a more functional structure and a higher density outcome. You're suggesting it's not worth that, if
no.
now or never.
No, because I only hear two landowners out of the 20 or 30 lots there wanting upzoning, and I hear about from about five more. So, without wanting to sound like
yep.
a populist,
professional planner would be the best.
And sounding like a professional planner instead of a populist, that's why I'm maintaining my recommendation.
Mr. Bart, I just wanted to ask you about the your comment about the 100k speed limit. Would you see that as a fundamental obstacle to rezoning? You've taken it into account, but I just wondered how fundamental it is in your mind.
At the moment, it looks as though you have about four or five properties that she's directly accessing Cemetery Road, and if there wasn't, it could create problems. And the district plan would try to manage that in terms of having a lot longer, perhaps a longer access separation between accesses, given the higher posted speed limit. But it's something that the council would need to look at if that was upzoned, and to look at maybe lowering that depending on the intensity of development. But it does come back to if there was a coherent overall vision for how key access on the Cemetery Road might occur instead of the ad hoc way, which probably would happen if it was simply upzoned and left for the individual landowners to do it. So I think that the fact that the 100 kilometre an hour road would pose issues. It probably would affect the operation of that road and potentially present safety issues as well.
I'll follow up to that, Mr. Barrett. If at the end of the day the panel got to the point of recommending some combination of UGBs and or upzones, Cemetery Road is under the council's control. Accepting that the council manages roads outside of the RMA, would it be appropriate for this panel to make a recommendation that in conjunction with any upzoning / UGB, the council review what the speed limit on that road should be?
Well, I wouldn't hear it. I don't think you've got any jurisdiction for that to be given effect to, but clearly the council...
Well, we can't require the council to do anything.
That's right. Clearly the council would listen to it and know that it's coming as part of of that rezoning.
Do you think it would serve integrated management for us to make such comments to non-RMA council functions?
Oh, it would have to assist overall. And it would foreshadow the, you know, that the speed environment for that road's likely to change.
Street investments.
Thank you, Mr. Barr. So using again the Range Royale method you created, accepting your view that the zone that's sought by this submitter isn't one of the PDP zones, why can't we just take the nearest substitute and rerun your analysis on that basis?
Being rezoned at the voting to residential?
Well, that would be one option. I don't know. The other option might be one of the versions of the large lot residential. One seems a bit smaller than township, one seems a bit bigger in terms of lot sizes, but but while I think your assessment is clear on the use of the zone that was sought, for other submissions that hasn't been the definitive end of the matter.
No, well, for this one there's a consented development which I've seen worse subdivision patterns. So I think the most efficient course here is to give effect to that resource consent, bearing in mind the complexities it creates in terms of and administration which future lot owners seek to undertake. If any resource consent doesn't comply with the conditions of consent, you have relatively unnecessary meeting resource consent. But that's the difference between this street development and the Ranch Royale approach, is that there's no development rights on the Ranch Royale land in terms of any consented lands that give an indication of what could be done as of right.
That subdivision that's been granted, is that in partial implementation?
It's been extended.
Oh, well, I noticed the grant was 2008.
Yeah, it's still live.
Yeah, okay, so that was
I think that, but it hasn't been given effect to.
If we were inclined to consider a PDP zone for the land, and taking into account what we know of it, including the resource consent, would the LDRZ or LLRZ be the
better? LDRZ.
Right. And which of the two would be most consistent with the Hawea 2020 vision for?
Probably LDRZ, because the 2020 vision speaks to intensification within that existing settlement.
Mm. Right, that's all. Yeah.
Without wishing to rain on the parade here, given the vast township zone, which as you said has a 800 square metre minimum density, do we in fact have scope to go any smaller than that?
Maybe not. I was asking the question hypothetically. In any case, and the shape, the size of those allotments don't help because they specifically ask for township zones, and that's what they ask for.
What are the size of the allotments?
I think they're around the 800 square metre mark.
So I think that's a back to the drawing board.
Unless it was LDRZ with an 800 metre minimum.
Yeah.
Or LLRZ. B. But that doesn't work either. No.
Okay. Further thought. And what size are those lots on that subdivision?
I think they're about 800.
I'm confused. So if the submitters seeking to apply the township zone, which is 800 square metres, and they are already 800 square metres, how do we end up with an extra 75 more anticipated?
Comparing to the notified zone, what have I said? Where's this?
So you're talking about the subdivision, the allotment sizes in the approved subdivision plan?
Yeah, so the PDP zones rural residential, but they've obtained a resource consent for a township density, and that's what you're looking at on figure 11.1. So the subdivision layout on 11.1 is emulates the township zone, or it's of a higher density than rural residential. So when I said the request therefore could enable 93 residential units, 75 more than that anticipated under the rural residential zone.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, the 4,000
square metres. Thank you.
Okay. Whatever.
So this submitter has sought a PDP zone. What I wanted to understand from you is that because the site is split zone and part of the zone is not subject to stage one, how does that stop us considering the site for one of the zones that is in stage one?
It doesn't. You can consider the component of the site zoned rural residential, the green.
I'm asking about the bit that's zoned township, because how will the council not find itself in exactly the same position you'll put to us now in stage two, when it says, oh, we can't consider the rural bit, that was last time, we can only now consider the township bit. You're effectively forcing it to be a split zone outcome by procedurally breaking up when the site could be considered. So what I'm asking is, even though the township zone isn't being considered now, does it mean that part of the site that is currently zoned township can't be considered, or can the submitted whole site be considered now, but only subject to the zone framework that's available to us?
In the motor machinist case law that the approach to scope is based on, where it talks about essentially the boundaries of what has been notified or not, does have a small amount of flexibility within it in terms of around the edges, and this may be one instance where it will be appropriate to take that approach. I appreciate that hasn't happened in the evidence set before you, but this is one example where I'd be happy to revisit that and look at it. The council wouldn't want to prevent a better outcome by taking a strict approach where the zone goes right through the middle of the site.
Yeah, I mean, presumably the submitter understands that there's a stage two to the PDP and has made a call that would rather see the site space determined on the basis of the stage one information rather than maybe wait and get a better, even better zone in the future. So,
well, even if the second half is notified in stage two, the submitter can of course submit again.
But, yeah. That's true.
But this is the catch 22 that I identified earlier, that the answer next time around is what you said. You're out of scope for the bit that was considered in stage one.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's the outcome that's been supported is consistent across both, and hopefully that's not too much of an issue. But.
Okay. Well, my only question really related to how we actually get to look at the whole site rather than see it split in two. So that's a very helpful answer, thank you. And I think in terms of your remaining concerns, Mr. Barr, just about infrastructure and transportation, I think we can deal with that. So no other questions, thank you.
My question comes back to hazard issues. Active fault line, is that something we should be concerned about? Or are there active fault lines all over the district?
Yes, there are.
Thank you. Commissioner Munro.
Yeah, just one in relation to your rebuttal evidence recommendation. So I'm looking at the annotator's topographical map you've included on page 60. And so from the southernmost yellow parcel boundary north to the thick green line, that would be the area subject to the large lot residential zoning. Is that right?
Correct.
And then between the green line and the red line would be the building area restriction?
No.
No?
From the...
The green line is the end of zone, end of UGB.
Yes.
And the red line is just part of the balanced rural, whatever it is.
No, the red line is just showing a certain contour.
Yeah.
And what that is just saying that if you have an 8 metre high house,
you won't be visible from above it.
Yes, yeah. You should be about right.
And so that's how you derive the green line.
Yeah.
I'm just wanting to figure out what will stop someone seeking consent right past the green line somewhere on the red.
Sorry if I set this out poorly, but my recommendation is that from the green line north, it's zoned retained rural as a building restriction area.
So there is a building restriction area?
Yes.
Sorry, that's what I wasn't clear on. And the building restriction area would be the entire balance of the site up to the highway boundary?
That's right, including the escarpment.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. That's all. Thanks.
Commissioner Hudson?
Thank you. Mr. Barr, I had one question, and that was, again, it comes back to traffic, seems to me, just asking the traffic question. But you said that in your rebuttal that more analysis is required. This is page 61, the top of the page, subparagraph E. More analysis required to ensure any road onto State Highway 84 is safe. So can you just clarify for me what process that follows? Is this because the balanced land, if we accept your recommendation in relation to the rezoning of the area, essentially to the south of the green line, then the balance is rural, and that means that the access has to go through that rural zoned part.
Could do, unless
from an adjoining lot.
Mm-hmm.
And does that provide sufficient method for assessing access?
Not so much the fact that the road's zoned rural. Again, the subdivision chapter and hopefully the PDP transportation chapter, certainly the operative would, have controls onto that road. But more importantly, it's State Highway 84, so kind of the jurisdiction of the NZCA. And I can't confirm if it's a limited access road.
Ms. Banks said that all state highways in the district are limited access roads.
Thank you. It's a limited access road, which gives the New Zealand Transport Agency a bit more clout. My understanding is that they do have direct control over the intensity and land uses associated with crossing points on the state highway. So, but because the NZCA are not a good submitter, they haven't told us what they thought of the idea of an access. At the moment, there's an existing residential access. You can see it on the image, on the contours of the LiDAR image.
Which
is
a fairly careful site visit there too, so you will know where the access was there.
Yeah, so it's a case of being mindful that the NZCA will have control over that access and may not be that impressed with a new neighbourhood essentially getting access onto that. But at the same time, they have a lawfully established crossing place onto the state highway now. There is also the option of going through the three-park zone. So that's essentially up to the landowner or developer to see how they're going to get through that. But fundamentally, I don't think it's a constraint to recommend the rezoning supported. It's not like there's ever been a crossing place formed onto a state highway for urban development, but just mindful that it's not in the council's.
Is it, so you're just acknowledging that it's something that has to be looked at, and from your response just now, you're also relying on the transport chapter taking effect.
That's right. That's right. But I've got that in DPA, you know, have jurisdiction on that road.
Just as a general question about NDTA's involvement, have they made any submissions on the sort of strategic transport?
Yes, they did. They didn't make any, in the Upper Clusa area, they didn't make any further submissions on rezoning proposals, but they were quite involved throughout the hearings on text at a strategic level and then on chapters in terms of their interests. So.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, following on from that, for me, I may have read you wrong, because in 3.8 here, do not support the submitted request to locate the land in the three park zone included within the three park structure plan. So what you just said, that they could access, because it's 33 lots, they could access off of the three park, that's still an option?
The three park is an adjoining site, so even if it's, no matter what it's zoned, it's basically they could lodge a subdivision plan showing access into the three park zone. Once,
and that's obviously with negotiation.
That's
with
right.
Three parts of whatever it was.
Yeah. Right.
So, because I'd have to say that intersection, notwithstanding that there is a highway access there, is technical term that would spring to mind would be crap. It's on a rise. It's got sun strike, la la. So, is there any way we could look at, you know, going fishing for asking for that?
The existing access onto the state highway, you mean? Yeah, I could imagine it might not be ideal in the eyes of the NCPA.
Because I think they would. I think I'm not wanting to put words in your mouth or my head about NCPA and their reaction, but it would be. It's not ideal.
Yeah, it would be ideal to try to include that site in the three parks, because it's just not as simple as set out in the submitted evidence. There's a structure plan, and then there's a rule which requires the approval of an outline development plan, which has already been approved.
Which I totally agree with,
yeah.
Which is why I sort of went, okay, well, they can't go off, they can't adjoin, they can't get road access to three parts, but if that's still an option.
Yeah, they can, yep. It's just up, initially it'll be up between them and between the two landowners reaching some sort of consensus or seeing how that site ties in with the ODP for three parts.
Good. Thank you.
A question, how the NZCA rules work. Does the fact that there is an existing access mean that do NZCA have any control on who's hooking into that access beyond the margins of state highway?
Yes, I think so. I think what used to be called the Roading Act, it might have changed, but a limited access road gives NZCA control over the intensity of the type of land use, the intensity. So my understanding is that they're obliged to grant an access to a crossing place from a site onto the state highway, but they have a level of import or control over the intensity of use.
Another option would be for the landowners to do a deal with the owners of Puzzle World to go out through their car park.
Still the same residual problems, I think. Sure. And so it's part of the complex conflict that car park at Puzzle World gets regularly full, as you'd be fully aware, and people park on the other side of the road, and there's always something doing something silly at that particular point, that in the Mount Iron Terminal, which is why you should be a 60k speed limit, but try to get that super transit.
Alright, we don't have to worry about Mr. Subaru. Here's a question, though. I can't recall, was that submission formally withdrawn?
or they just abandon their or withdraw their request to be heard?
No, there's a letter addressed to the council's GM setting it out and setting out a few reasons why they withdrawn it and that sort of thing.
But they have formally withdrawn
it? Yes. We need to probably plug it up on the website in some form if we haven't yet.
That might be an idea. Like, I have seen it, but I've just got to know what it said.
Can I ask a small point of clarification, sir?
Certainly.
If somebody's formally withdrawn because the site has been sold, does that mean that the purchaser then has no right of submission or appeal or...?
I think in this case it was the purchaser who withdrew it.
That's simple as that question.
Right. What next? Salivary parts. A small place on the hill. Withdrawn those part of the submissions related to the O&L and the, the UGB, or if they're just not pursuing them?
My understanding is that they're not pursuing them. There's been no, I've never read anything saying they're withdrawn. They're just now pursuing the rural lifestyle zone instead of some sort of urban, is it extension to the urban growth boundary?
Commissioner.
Look, just one question. In Ms. Malsop's analysis, she identified a small finger of the site adjacent to State Highway 84 between Anderson Road and Robboy Lane that in her view could accommodate some further development. What's your view on that?
Yes, I'd be happy to accept Ms. Malsop's advice on that, and I was standing next to her when she came to that conclusion. But from a resource consent perspective, sure. But from a, I might have mentioned this in just about at the end of my rebuttal, but even though it's not what this bit is asked for, but the two building platforms essentially, with 8 pages of text for the district plan chapter, I wouldn't recommend that. I still...
No, I understand all that. That wasn't answering that one. But putting aside every other complexity with the submission, you agree with Ms. Malsop that small area?
Because
I think it's proposed as VAR in the PDP, is that right?
Oh, are we talking about the two building platforms as part of the rural lifestyle zone? Or the...
Yes, we're talking about, I think, we're talking about the ones... Are we talking about the... BRA.
We're talking about the BRA that comes down to Anderson Road.
Oh,
right down by the State Highway.
Yeah.
The tree said, because currently there's houses on the ridge.
Yeah,
sorry.
Saying
it to come down. That's what I was talking about.
No, I disagree with that, sorry.
Okay.
I thought we were talking about the building platform.
So you disagree with her because?
Because... Just from an overall planning perspective, entrance to Wanaka, I appreciate it's not a particularly sensitive landscape, or it's lost its values because you can see houses coming up. But that's a far cry from seeing the potential for houses to be built down to the State Highway 84 end of the road. So from an overall helicopter view of the entrance to Wanaka and a planning perspective, I don't see the fact that there's houses sticking up be a reason to remove the building restriction area and say, have a go then.
Thank you. That was my question on that one.
My follow-up was the question I asked Ms. Malsop that she didn't know the answer to. Was Rob Roy Drive consented on the basis that those houses wouldn't be visible over that ridge line?
I doubt it.
How long ago was that?
I don't know. Mr. Clue will probably be able to tell you when he presents to the panel. But given that it's zoned low-density residential in the operative plan and there's no particular building restrictions associated with that, I think it was just a given that houses are going to be here and there's going to be some sticking over the top. I don't think it was identified as a particular resource management issue.
You've got very good peripheral vision, sir. But my question is of a more general nature relating to Mount Zion, and that is I haven't really picked up anywhere, forgive me if I've looked at a clear understanding of what rights the public has over the walking track. And whether there's some sort of formal protection of them. Are you able to answer that?
I think the best thing I can refer you to is the appendices to Mr. White's evidence. And does the submitted evidence also have advice from a recreation expert? Because there are maps, there are plans in the submitted evidence showing the walkways on Allenby's land that are formally arranged for public access through easements. It shows the connecting walkways into the Department of Conservation land. It also shows the existing informal walks that people walk over, and it also shows what they're proposing would be set up as with formal easements if their submission is accepted. So that's the place to look. And that shows you exactly what walkways on Mount Zion are illegal, so to speak, and what are informal.
I can certainly follow that up when the submitters give their evidence. It was really from a mindset or point of view that if these walkways were not protected, then what might the risk be in the longer term to ensuring that they're available?
I might pay to have one of those maps in front of me before I answer that, but there are already established walkways that let people get from that main car park across down these lands up to the top and back down through. The extent to which the public kind of roam freely over the rest of the land isn't really necessarily something I can talk to, but there are established tracks on it.
Oh well, yes. I mean, we walked on them, but it was just, and some of them clearly identified as being a dock section and country section. But it's just what happened further up the mountain, and so I haven't got into the detail of the maps that have been provided by the submitter. Thank you. In terms of visibility of dwellings on Mount Zion. There has been a lot of emphasis on the landscape quality. I wondered whether from a planning perspective there are other aspects of residential activity that also have an effect, and what I've noticed is that the rules and plans have relate to the receptivity of cladding and roofs and so on, but what about windows? What effect do you get from reflections of glass, and is that significant in the
context? It can be, but I suppose it just comes down to a degree of practicality and how far a council can go and how far an applicant would like to suggest, and how realistic a decision maker is around accepting a development in sensitive environments without letting people actually have windows and houses. And Mr. Baxter's evidence, which I don't see that often, takes the step of asking for roofs to be a certain pitch so that they reduce glare, because even on recessive colours at a certain time of the day when the sun's at a certain angle, it will potentially reflect more off the roof. got a big pitch. I think he talks about needing ease so that the windows, the glare isn't as bad as what it could be. But as I've sort of hinted in my rebuttal evidence, it's an environment so sensitive that you need controls like that. You really need to question the merits of development going in there in the first place.
Thank you.
I think we have traversed but just with regard to the BRA, the BRA, adjacent to State Highway 6. You specifically said that you were should be retained regarding about the view towards Mount Iron going in and going out. If that BRA was used for another use, say for example a park and ride, do you think that would hinder, you know, if there was another use that could be through some machinations, negotiations could be used, such as a park and ride, or would that be as unacceptable?
No, a building restriction area in the plan wouldn't stop somebody, in terms of the way it's framed and the phrase building restriction area, to any building. So it restricts buildings, it doesn't restrict roads or other infrastructure going in there.
So if the whole thing was a formed, manicured thing, that wouldn't necessarily be considered a building as a definition of a building.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's perhaps an answer is probably stepping beyond my grief as a planner and more of a landscape or urban design answer. But
dare I say it, the commissioner might be wearing a different hat as well.
Just keeping an open mind about all options. No, it's just because it was just how it would affect the views. But that's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I've got one more, if I may. I'm missing one more question on Allenby.
Yes. Well,
It was just following on from hearing from Mr. Davis yesterday, where he said that if it was a matter of choosing between the two SNAs, the one that existing and the one that was being offered by the submitter, that the one being offered, the southern one, was, had greater ecological merit. I wondered whether that opinion would be sufficient to sway your overall recommendation not to accept the submission.
No, no, it's not, because Mr. Davis still considers that notified ECNA, that it is an ECNA and it should stay as one in the plan, and that nearly all of the building platforms, except the ones that he discussed yesterday, would compromise that. And that's just one reason, and there's a few others that I've identified as well, which I've made clear, so no, it doesn't change my view.
So we've talked about the houses appearing over the ridge line at State Highway. If we go to the houses that are on the skirts of Mount Iron to the north, in effect under the what is now being proposed, to my eye they are very visible, some of them right in your face, and you can see them. We stopped at the top of the plantation and they're visible to the naked eye from there. Was that also understood and accepted when they were consented?
Yes,
you old enough to remember?
It's long before my time. Again, Mr. Clue's family's owned that land for a long time, so he might be able to tell you, but I don't think I was being corrected, but my understanding of the proposed 1995 district plan is that zoning wasn't there. The rural residential zone existed in the 1995 plan. The rural lifestyle zone didn't. That came through by way of submissions. So I don't know what processes went on for that zoning to become established on Mount Iron and Mount Narrows, the Hidden Hills subdivision, and for a few places. So, not much help to you, sorry, sir.
The O&L line shifting with the Hikawai Conservation Reserve, I think Ms. Malsop's agreed with that. Do we have a map as to where it's going to shift to?
My section, yeah, Ms. Malsop's evidence in chief, and my section 32AA should have covered that. That's attached to my...
I'm just thinking about the practicalities of... We were reminded to accept that recommendation, and we know exactly where it's supposed to go.
That was piece 34 of Ms. Malsop's evidence in chief.
The Commissioner's supplied the answer. The issue about, well, if that development were consented, could you get fire engines up there in terms of the access that's proposed? Have you got a view?
My answer can only be anecdotal, sorry sir. I don't think it's impossible. I think you can get a concrete truck up there, you can get a fire appliance up there, but I have heard anecdotally that as part of the response for managing fire at Mount Iron, that fire appliances don't go up or would be reluctant to go up the hill because there's lots of people coming down. That's something that Mr. Blue might know, given that he's a resident on the hill.
And as he told us on our site, it nearly got burnt out due to the flammability of the kaunuka all over the hillside. Oh yes, there's another question rising out of your 12.33, B, you refer to the modified McLean scale of rabbit protection. Where on the scale should it be? I have to admit I've never heard of the scale, but...
Alright, if I can handle that, sir. there's a scale of something, of numbers, I think, 1 to 5 or something, and I think maybe it takes 2 and a half might be acceptable, so I can give you some more information on that.
I've got 2 and a half, confirm and reply. Well, that's all I have. Any more on ALB? Well, I think we'll have the afternoon tea break then. Thank you very much. Back at 20 to 4.